Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, social critic, and mentor. Navigating the messy art of living and the complex beauty of relationships through these conversations that we need to have but often shy away from. It's another Tuesday, Elizabeth. It's time for a conversation with the reluctant therapist. And where are we off to today?
Today we are going to do a little spring cleaning. And probably not spring cleaning the way you expect, because why would we do something you expected? But spring cleaning in the psychosocial realms. And here's why. And I think I might have talked about this last week, but I've been going through this phase of life where I'm clearing out things. Like, we did a big cluttery house emptying a few years ago, but this last few weeks has been like the nitty gritty stuff, an old trunk of memorabilia that I've been carting, keeping with me. And it was all this period of time from when I was 16 to 20. And then there's a whole nother trunk from like 20 to 25. And I've been going through them and rereading everything, which has taken hours and hours and hours, but rereading. And then Saturday night, under the pink full moon, we had a bonfire to much of it and let it go.
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa. It was, and that's not even everything. That was just one trunk. So this will be a multi-stage burning and letting go. But what's interesting about it is that I hosted a woman's circle on Saturday night under the pink full moon. And part of the theme of the night was this moon's energy around transitions and relationships and, you know, springtime and rebirth and growing ideas and dreams, kind of all those things wound together. But there was a theme in the group of so many women saying they'd been letting go of and shedding things out of their life and wanting to pass, you know, on goods and items or just remove goods and items from their life. And so I thought, well, it's not just me then. And it could be seasonal, because we talk about spring cleanups and spring flings and this you know, vitalized energy to want to have our lives feel clear. But I think there's something about, and this is going to sound wooey and I'll own it, but there's something about the planetary alignments as well, because my evolutionary astrology friends who really go deep dive into the ancient art of evolutionary astrology talk about how we're in this planetary anomaly, that things are lined up planetarily that haven't happened in some cases for 12,000 years, in some 165 years. So there's big shifts. And the reason that I give credence to this is because if you think about the moon's power, just that one moon energy, it controls the tides on planet Earth. And so if that pull from just the moon can control the tides, and we are all energy beings, and one of my students asked me yesterday in class, what do you mean by psychic energy, Professor Barrett? I can't really define that. How do you find it? And I said, here's how I define it. If you've ever been in a room with someone and you feel all of your energy and life source being sucked out of you, that's psychic energy in action, right? That someone in your presence, their energy can be so draining that you can feel yourself being pulled down. And if you've ever been in the presence of someone who gives you this bolt of energy, makes you feel excited, you're feeling psychic energy in another way. So that's kind of the easy definition of the two. But then just imagine the planetary power and how that can impact our psyche and our moods and our movements and, you know, global shakeups. So wherever you'd like to go with that, that's one part of the story. The more pragmatic part is, so, okay, we're feeling this shakeup inside. We're feeling this need to clear space, to let go, to shed, to shed whatever it is that we're hanging on to, just like we comb our hair, you know, and shed that way, or snakes shed their skin. We have to go through these processes of letting go, changing, morphing, so we can make space for what is new in our life. Why is it important psychologically to do shedding or to do some shedding? And also, what happens when you recognize or maybe realize or you know someone who cannot shed at all, who really has a tough time letting go of objects? And conversely, because they are related, someone who has a hard time of letting go of grudges and gripes or conflict in relationships. And this is my argument, is that there is a tie between that hoarder-esque aspect, the hoarding disorder, which is in the DSM, but even a mild level of hoarding, hanging on to possessions, I think also can be equated to hanging on to feelings of being wronged or feeling like the relationship is going nowhere or feeling angry at someone. That the part of our spring cleaning that I want to explore today is kind of merging those two things. In your spring cleanup, not only am I encouraging you to do the physical cleanup around your house or around your things, around your possession, but also it may be time to do some spring cleanup around your relationships. For example, maybe you've been kind of letting things go, this discontent, disappointment, maybe annoyance with a roommate or a loved one or your intimate partner. But, you know, you just kind of keep letting it go because the hassle or the discomfort of having to face these feelings feels greater than I'll just keep sucking it up, right? I'll just keep swallowing it and go along. But as you know, when we allow things to get pushed down and ignored for too long, they eat away at us, for one thing, and cause emotional and physical distress. But then at some point, they also explode. And quite often, you don't explode at the person that you're having the conflict with. You end up exploding at someone else, someone that probably didn't deserve to take that on. So I want to talk about the cleaning up our relationships and the cleaning up our space. And just as a little forewarning, we're going to talk about hoarding. Because over the years I've been doing the show, I've had multiple requests from people to talk about hoarding and hoarding disorder and what that looks like and how do we address it. And so in the spirit of this spring cleanup, I thought this would be a good time to kind of talk about the difference between, is it a collection? Is it my collection or is it hoarding? And is it clutter or is it hoarding? And how do we kind of define the differences between those things to catch ourselves? And how maybe can we identify or help someone who may be at risk? Because a little nugget about hoarding disorder. And you know, we don't know a ton about what the triggers are, what causes it. It's not a biological disorder. There is some hint that it might be genetic, but maybe not as genetic as it is learned behavior, because hoarders quite often are the children of hoarders, that we kind of develop that behavior because you grew up in it. But maybe it's, you know, has a little genetic piece in it, but not a lot. But there really isn't a definitive reason that hoarding exists. But one of the things that we do know is that quite often the early signs of hoarding start in adolescence. And so you can start seeing some of the red flag behaviors. For example, hanging on to items, personal possessions, and having such an emotional attachment to them that if they were to be removed, it causes great distress, you know, great anxiety or great depression. I think a little bit of my younger daughter's relationship with her stuffed animals. And I wouldn't say that she's a stuffed animal hoarder because all of them still live at my house. So she's not carrying them with her in her life. But I do remember when she was younger, and this is before adolescence, if one of the animals were to have disappeared, or because I have tried to clean them out at different times, she would recognize that and would cause really deep distress, as if it was an actual animal or a person or someone very close. And that's a little red flag of information if you have adolescents who do feel really attached to some things, like, don't come in my room. I have the mess just the way I like it. I understand where everything is. You know, parents often will say, how do we, you know, uphold standards of cleanliness in our house because my teenager insists that it's perfect just the way it is. And how do we know if that's, you know, early symptoms of potentially hoarding down the road? Well, that's the other tricky part about this. We can look backwards and say, oh, there are some signs that there was going to be a hoarding problem, but it's really difficult, almost impossible, to be in the moment of an adolescent and say, oh, I think you're on the trail to be a hoarder. So that doesn't help when it comes to diagnosing someone with potential hoarder disorder. It kind of rhymes, doesn't it? It's really difficult to get a preemptive take on someone who's going to be a hoarder. It's really, in hindsight, it's like, oh, I could have seen that coming. Because as much as, you know, someone might be hoarding all their stuffed animals or might be keeping, you know, every bottle cap that they had, they also can just as quickly move away from that. Like, as I said, my daughter moved away to college. We were not sending stuffed animals with her. So as meaningful as they were for her when she was young, she moved on and left them behind. And so we have to kind of look for the red flags, but it's really hard to determine. So here's what I'm asking of you today. Do a little spring cleaning in your head. Are there any relationships, issues that you need some spring cleanup with that we can talk about? Maybe a tough discussion or conversation that you're needing to have and not quite sure how to start, or wondering, should I even bother having that conversation? How do we clean up messes in relationships? You know, how do we kind of clear the air? Because that's a challenge. No one really loves conflict. But we all really like a relationship that feels harmonious. So maybe we want to talk about that. That's on the table. I'm curious to know how you feel about your collections. Are you collecting, or are you maybe hoarding in a way that you don't recognize? Because one of the reasons that people do hoard is that it alleviates a sense of anxiety, that quite often people accumulate things because the actual purchasing or acquiring of the items gives someone a sense of comfort and calm. And so we might be utilizing or using shopping or purchasing or acquiring goods unknowingly as a way of calming anxiety or even depression. So maybe there's some concerns you have about your own collecting of goods. I'm going to keep saying collecting because hoarding sounds really...
It has a connotation attached to it.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yes. And it really should be a judgment-free thing because, you know, no one hoards because I was going to say they like it. Well, in some point, that is serving something in them. But I keep trying to sit with the idea of accumulating or over-collecting. I'm trying to find some different words because here's the last piece of my preview of the hour. Is that you can be a hoarder on a lot of levels, because the spectrum of what hoarding looks like goes from very mild hoarding tendencies to life-threatening tendencies. And I think we've all, you know, heard stories of people who were crushed in their own home by the books and magazines that they had stored up so to the ceiling and it falls on them. I mean, I've heard that, or not being able, you know, to be found because they were so buried in things. We've heard those stories. Those are the extreme hoarder experiences. But there's a lot of people who live on the mild end of the hoarder spectrum, but just enough of it to feel kind of some shame, or they're hiding it. They don't want people to know that they're kind of coping by making purchases or storing toilet paper, for a rainy day. So there's a lot of levels of hoarding behaviors. So that's on the table as well. And I can say that the people who have asked me to do this topic over the years generally say, my sister or my friend or someone I care deeply about is a hoarder and I don't know what to do. And we'll try to address that today as well. So this is a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you'll be welcomed into the conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I'm always happy to hear from you. You can also leave me a message on Instagram or Facebook. And I'm happy to reply that way as well. And you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org. They're all there for your enjoyment. Or if you want to take me on the go, you can now find us on Spotify and YouTube. A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Subscribe, and the show will be there waiting whenever you have time to listen. Or if you could share with others, that would be great as well. Love to grow the show. So we're going to take a quick break and come back and continue this conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Who doesn't know what I'm talking about? Who's never left home? Who's never struck out? To find a dream and a life of their own. A place in the clouds, a foundation of stone. Many precede and many will follow. A young girl's dreams no longer hollow. It takes the shape of a place out west. But what it holds.
Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and our number is 805-781-3875. It's just me and you today, you and me and you. So I'd love to hear from you, and of course, Brad is here as well. So before I jump into the hoarder part, I want to jump back into the cleanup part, more on the just kind of life cleanup piece. One of the reasons that doing a spring cleanup, a self cleanup, a physical cleanup is so helpful is because if there are things you want to change in your life, dreams that you're trying to achieve, experiences you're wanting to have, one of the things that prevents us from being able to move into those new spaces, those wide open spaces, is that we're so cluttered psychically and actually physically that there's no room for new things to happen, new things to come to you. So part of my going through and rereading all the cards and letters and just journals, things that I'd written one more time, is that I wanted to experience them. And I think I said this last week as well. It's not like it's been a great experience. Some of it's nice. Some people I remember, some of the people who had I have letters from have passed away. And, you know, there's some sadness and grief around that. But it feels like a something that needs to be done, like some sort of personal mission that has to be accomplished. Because then when they are able to be released through the bonfire up into the universe, then I've taken all of those experiences and I've integrated them, because all of those letters, all of those journals are all what made me who I am today. But I don't need to physically carry them with me any longer to have them serve their purpose. Because who's going to read them again? You know, I'm 64. I won't really need to read them again. My children will not care. My husband definitely does not care. It really is just about me and my experiences. And so who I am today is represented in that box, but now they're gone. And with those memories, you know, physical letters gone, there's now more space physically in my home, but also psychically in myself for new experiences to happen. Because whether we recognize it or not, when we are holding on to our old stories, right, the old boyfriends or the really great friendship or the nostalgic memories or the journal entries, when we hang on to them, they pull us back a bit and they do take up psychic space. And so we can't continue to bring in new information. If you get into your 60s, right, you've collected a lot of psychic baggage along with you, along with physical baggage. And so if you would like to really have that refresh, that renewed sense of wonder in the world and what's possible for me, you have to be willing to carve away some of the things that no longer serve you. And that's a good place to start. And it's interesting, one of the things that came up on Saturday night where many people said they had become the ones who acquired grandparents and parents' China buffets. I actually acquired them from my grandmother as well. So there must be something about that big break front or the buffet. And they had all the china and the glassware. And they said, doesn't fit my style, doesn't fit who I am. It feels burdensome to have it, but I feel incredibly guilty, you know, getting rid of this and not carrying it on for the future. And I don't know how to do with those feelings. And so we talked about how, you know, you don't have to, when we talk about shedding, shedding is the clearing off of the excess, but it doesn't mean we're going bald. Essentially, we're not shaving our head, if we're using the shedding metaphor, that you can, when you parse through and you're carrying the history of your descendants, that you can keep a piece, right? One piece. One of my friends, Caleb Nichols, who was on the show, also talked about how you can take pieces of a journal, a few pages, and they're just kind of representative of that time. And then maybe you revisit that. So if you feel that anxiety of, oh, I can't let everything go, it's my grandmother's or it was so special, absolutely you don't have to just clear cut everything, but to pick just a couple of pieces. And then what my husband and I have done is we have two trunks that we use as coffee tables, and we each have a trunk. And so the goal is that we are each going to just fill our trunk with our sacred items, I don't know what to call it, our tchotchkes, our memories, so that the goal is when we're gone, the kids will just have one trunk to deal with. And if you put things in the trunk, you have to write why it was special to you and why it's in there, so it's not mysterious. Why is this picture? Why is this piece? So when we talk about spring cleanup, we're not talking about having to just dump everything and go or just moving on and forgetting, but it's about integrating those memories and then making space for new. And dreams are a really important piece of this, because we talk a lot about follow your dreams, chase your dreams, right? Do the things that are important to you. And people will feel frustrated. Well, it's like, you know, I don't know how I'm going to accomplish that, or I never am going to make it happen. A lot of times people don't want to say their dreams out loud because you're afraid if you say it out loud, one, you'll have to do it. Because when we make a promise to ourselves that we're going to do something and then you say it aloud, it's like, oh, now everybody knows. But there's also that piece of protectionism. If someone knew what my dream was, then it didn't happen. I would be so greatly disappointed. But another way to look at it is this. Somehow our dreams get filled not just by our pushing and persevering and doing and, you know, making goals and setting plans. Like, that can be part of reaching a dream, because rarely does a dream happen without any effort. But at some point along with the effort, or besides the effort, you have to drop the effort and let the dreams go and not keep pushing and pushing and pushing, but let it go and trust now that the universe is going to help that dream come to fruition. I hope that makes sense, because when we hold so tightly onto something, sometimes we squeeze the life out of it and it is impossible to have it come true or manifest or be. So in this cleanup, the spring cleanup, part of the goal can be letting go and just saying, I trust that whatever's coming my way is exactly what I need. I think that makes sense.
I think it makes sense too.
So aside from the cleanup piece, and again, the cleanup of our relationships, we're going to talk about hoarding. And again, as I said before, I don't like the idea of hoarding disorder, because I don't want it to feel shaming, because it's not something that anyone wishes for. And like all mental health issues, a lot of us, I'm going to say most, I'm just going to go as far as to say all people have the potential for some sort of mental health crisis in their lifetime. Statistically, every person will have some mental health crisis experience at some point in their life, whether it's situational depression or a period of time of anxiety, or they might go through a major depressive disorder issue or a psychotic issue. Maybe they develop some OCD after a traumatic event, maybe PTSD through a traumatic event. All human beings, if you've lived your life, are going to experience some sort of mental health crisis. And mental health disorders, you know, are related to normal human experiences. And hoarding's a really good example of that, because people like to have treasures. People like to collect things. I mean, as you mentioned, there's a whole industry of collectibles and conferences and television shows, you know, that talk about collectibles, and people get really serious about them. You know, a collector is someone who accumulates related objects generally recognized as collectibles with some established value. There's a definition of what it is to be a collector. You know, our possessions, the things that we cherish. My husband loves ticket stubs, you know, from old events going all the way back to high school. Brad's got them as well. You know, they take on a high attachment value that we care deeply because it brings us back to this magical place that feels really important. So it's not uncommon for people to hold dearly items that they have collected. The things that we cherish give us a sense of identity and who we are, a reminder of our life, a sense of safety, a sense of comfort. We see those things that are meaningful to us in our house, and we feel secure and good. You know, we have a sense of responsibility for caring for them. It gives our life a kind of a groundedness. And so in many, many ways, you know, this whole collectible part of the human experience is incredibly normal. What shifts, though, is when someone is collecting and the collecting becomes, the possessions become more important in some ways than relationships in their life. That they start to kind of hang on to the items and alienate people. That's a sign of a problem. Or the hoarder is maintaining or keeping things or collecting things, personal possessions, items that no longer have any use in their life, or they, you know, no longer feel emotionally attached to them, but they can't let them go. Or more commonly, when we think about hoarders, they have, you know, this intense need or desire to keep all things, even those that have no value, like junk mail or newspapers or toilet paper rolls, you know, materials that other people might call garbage. Now, for the hoarder, it becomes as sacred as grandma's teacup. So I want us to recognize that, you know, someone who struggles with a hoarding disorder is just like everyone else who started off collecting and then something goes awry. And as I said earlier, we don't know exactly what triggers hoarding disorder, but some of the risk factors include experiencing a traumatic event.
Right? Definitely. So it becomes, I've viewed that in my own life with other people and to a certain extent myself,
yes,
in collecting.
There's a coping to that, right? A calming to that after you've had a traumatic event. It gives someone a sense of safety. Someone who has a persistent difficulty in making decisions, which you wouldn't necessarily tie to hoarding, but you do have to make decisions to throw things away and to let things go. And if you have this chronic inability to make decisions, I can see how that, again, would get magnified. And then, as I also mentioned, someone who has a family member who's also a hoarder, it becomes a learned event. OCD is very connected to the hoarding disorder. It's actually one of the most common features of obsessive compulsive disorder. OCD is someone who hoards. It also, this obsessive need to collect, you know, becomes that compulsion. And keeping material objects is a way for people to not suffer. But then, ironically, the collecting and the, you know, alleviating the stress by finding something also leads to anxiety and depression, because you know you're continuing to get things, acquire things, just because you feel compelled to. So in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the DSM, the actual symptoms for a diagnosis of a hoarder are these. One, there is a persistent difficulty discarding or parting with possessions regardless of their value or lack thereof of any value. Number two, a difficulty discarding possessions due to distress associated when trying to get rid of them. Number three, the difficulty discarding possession leads to clutter of the living spaces and compromising the use of any living spaces because of the clutter. And number four, the hoarding creates a clinically significant distress or impairment in functioning. For example, not having people come to your house, avoiding contact with family because you feel ashamed of what's happening in your house, or in some ways the possessions become more important. And so if this is something that you're experiencing or someone you know is experiencing, if they meet these criteria, here's the other challenging part. Yes, this exists in the DSM, but how do we treat someone who is a hoarder? Because it's one of the most challenging disorders to actually treat, because we don't know really what triggers it completely. All right, so this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. I think I've laid out a pretty good description of what hoarding looks like and what some of the concerns might be. We're going to take a quick break and come back and open up the phone lines and continue this conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Well, the road rolls out like a welcome mat to a better place than the one we're at. And I ain't got no kind of plan, but I've had all of this town I can stand. And I got friends out on the coast. We can jump in the water and see what flows. Saving for a rainy day. Let's beat the storm and be on our way. And it don't matter to me wherever we are, where I want to be. And honey, for once in our lives, let's take our chances and roll the dice. I can be your lucky penny, you can be my four-leaf clover. Starting over.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I love the idea of starting over. I love do-overs so much, you know that. And part of this spring cleanup is this chance to reset. Reset your relationships, get on that solid ground together, clear the air. You know, the only way through is through. And so if you're needing to have a conversation, here are the two best tips. One, know what it is you want the outcome of that conversation to be. You can't just say, I feel all these things, but not have a goal to what needs to change or how things can change to make it better again. Because then you're just unloading or dumping on your partner. But if you have a clear set of, I find myself holding back sharing how I feel with you because I'm afraid that you're going to reject me, or I'm concerned about the lack of time we're spending together, and I worry that you're not as interested as I am. Knowing that at the end of this conversation, I want to be closer to you. Or at the end of this conversation, I'd like us to set dates so that we can be together. Or at the end of the conversation, I would appreciate you sharing more in the responsibilities in the house so that we can feel more partnered together. If you know where you want the conversation to end, it will help you to address the tough conversation. Just venting never solves an issue. So that's one spring cleanup in the relationships. And I'm also going to say the thing that I always want to say is that it's springtime, for gosh sakes. It's about sex and life and new opportunities. And if you haven't hugged your partner or kissed them in a while or held their hand, you know, it's time.
Clean it's a up good your time act. Of the year to do that, for sure.
It is.
Believe me.
It's like clean up your act. Clean up your relational issues so that you can get physically close again, because that's the glue. I mean, the physicalness and the intimacy, that's the glue. So clean up your act. That's a relational thing. The hoarder aspect, though, you know, only 2 to 6% of the population are actual hoarders with a hoarder disorder, which now I can't stop saying because it rhymes. But 2 to 6%. But then, as I said, there's a spectrum from mild to extreme. And so a lot of people are going to feel that. And even mild hoarding can prevent us from having the space for new things. So you've been nodding your head a lot since I started talking. So clearly I'm either tapping something or you're just being nice.
Oh, no, no. You're definitely tapping into several different things.
All right. Well, what's hitting you?
Well, on a all of it personal in one way or another. Mm-hmm. But going back to your talk about how hoarding can separate one from your family because you don't want them to come to your house. Mm-hmm. I went through that in my own extended family, mm-hmm. where a member of my extended family, for years, all of a sudden, we would only meet out for dinner at a separate location. Mm-hmm. And when that person passed on, we were responsible for, we finally got to the house, and it literally took us 4 hours to clear off a space to sit on the couch in the living room. And the house had not been, he'd been just bringing things in for years, and it took us months and months and months. And I believe, it had always been inherent in there. There was one room that historically I understood had been that room, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But after he lost his spouse, it dramatically mm-hmm. you know, went overboard. Mm-hmm. And so from that standpoint, I can understand it. I'm a person who has always collected something like comic books or right now it's guitars and comic books and so forth. But I also had traumatic things happen. Mm-hmm. My father was a guy who did not believe in any of this and took great joy in burning my comic books in front of me when I was a young man, and you know, so that he could have the clean space that he wanted to have. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that weighed with me as well, you know. And so
Would make sense, and again, beginning in adolescence,
yeah,
triggered by a traumatic event, and yeah, then you need to find comfort and security with those things.
Yeah. And then as the years went on, I had some events where I more or less lost everything, including all of my, the things that were my journals or my things that proved that I was alive.
Yes.
Let's just say.
It's a good way to say it.
And so I spent a lot of years trying to just recoup some of those things just so I could say, this is me. You know, I was alive, and here are the things that meant something to me. And I think that's an extension of that people may not understand. But I also collect guitars, too, high ticket items. And, you know, my wife will tell you that I have way too many of them. But I will tell you that I admire them all and I love them. And I'm just looking at them now at this stage of the game as more of an investment and a legacy I can pass on.
Well, you'll know your connection to them when it comes time to part with one, because that's usually where the rubber meets the road for people.
I'm going to tell you, there are two things that tell me that I'm on the right track here. Mm-hmm. And one is that I have been able to part with them over the years when I wanted to acquire one that was in my eye more, you know, something that was kind of, if not rare, but just attractive. And so I have been able, I always keep one or two that I can give. The other thing is that I follow a particular guitar company out of Canada and really have a lot of their pieces because they do wild and weird guitars. They just sent me an email with like 50% off one of their guitars that I've had my eye on for years. And I looked at it and I said, I'm not going to pull the trigger on it because I don't need it. I have enough and I'm not, you know, I don't need to put anything else on the pile for now. And so that to me gives me some small comfort that it hasn't gotten out of my control.
You haven't slipped into the disorder. That is, and again, as I mentioned, there, it's a spectrum that people can have mild case of hoarder disorder and then to the extreme. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, our number is 805-781-3875. And you got a call.
I did during the break, and okay, they didn't want to leave their name, but okay. She says, I know I have a problem, but I'm too scared to tell anyone about it. Mm. And she says, I try to let items go, but I feel like a part of me dies every time I throw something away. Where do I start? Mm-hmm. I kind of relate to that on some small level.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in. And there is so much shame that's attached to this as well, that when something, you know, goes from being, oh, that's a fun collectible, to now no one can come to my house. And that sense of feeling like a part of you is going to die is really common. In some of the research, another case study someone had talked about, not even being able to throw away a receipt from 5 years ago because that receipt represented a day in their life. And if I threw away the receipt, then it's as if that day didn't happen. So I just want you to know, caller, that feeling is not uncommon, that if you're experiencing that, is part of kind of that hoarder experience, that sense of safety and comfort. And the where to start piece, well, there's three different psychotherapies that are used to address hoarder disorders. One is cognitive behavioral therapy, but I want to say that it tends to be a fairly pragmatic, a little on the cold side of the therapeutic spectrum. And so it doesn't often take into account the emotional attachment piece, the way that the items are serving or feeding our soul or the person, your soul. So to look for more of a compassionate focused psychotherapy, EFT, emotionally focused therapy, might be a way to go to get a start. And you can find clinicians that specialize in emotionally focused therapy, EFT. If you look through Psychology Today, it lists all of the psychotherapists, and I'm also happy to kind of help people refer. Some people take antidepressants to help settle their mood. I have a lot of mixed feelings about that always because it's not a medicatable disorder. It's not a biological disease. But then the other piece is exposure therapy. And exposure therapy is very intensive, and it requires working with a therapist that helps you physically let go of something, deal with the emotions that come up with that letting go of, sitting with those emotions and having to kind of deal with the suffering. Because ultimately, any change of habits, behaviors, disordered behaviors can only happen if we go through the suffering piece. That's why, you know, taking medications can take the sting off, but they're not a cure. No one gets healed. You really, as I said earlier, you only get through by going through. And so if you're really wanting to address your concerns about am I hoarding or I can't throw things away, finding a good talk therapist who specializes in OCD and obsessive compulsive disorder, and also has experience in exposure therapy and has a compassion lens, those are going to be your best start. And also to tell yourself that this doesn't have to happen in a week. You know, it doesn't have to happen in 6 weeks or 6 months, because if you've been acquiring things for 10, 15 years, it's a lot to ask that you're going to pull up a dumpster on a Saturday and be done. So to give yourself grace for that as well. And thank you so much for calling.
I want to just introduce a concept that maybe you haven't considered yet either. Mm-hmm. And when I came to KCBX and I started doing some of my own programming, like Across the Tracks, I started saving every one of my shows.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I'm doing that is because I'd like to have something that my family can listen back to, thinking that they will. But I mean, I think in some small part, I'm leaving this to them so that if they ever want to hear my voice or hear the things that made me, you know, that I created, mm-hmm. that they could do that. But it does occur to me that there's a certain aspect of that built into it as well. What are your thoughts?
Yes, I agree that there's that wanting to leave behind that part of yourself because you want to be witnessed and remembered. I clearly relate to that as well. But I always think about who does it serve at the end of the day? Like, how many shows will they listen to? How much do they need to hear your voice? And that's something, when I talk about cleaning up relationships, that's the great conversation starter with our children or with your friend or with your spouse. It's like, hey, let's sit and have a real honest discussion. Like, how nostalgic are you for this, or how much will you care? You might be surprised. They might say, leave everything. We'll listen to your voice every day. And then I'll say, well, we need some therapy. Right? If listening to my voice is going to fill the rest of your days. But at the same time, to make that a conversation, to see, you know, what's going to be something they might be interested in. That's where I would go. Like, here's the thing about all secretive behaviors, and hoarding is one of those secretive behaviors. Cutting is a secretive behavior. There are things that we do that we're ashamed of, that we don't want to find out, and we hide it as best that we can. Is that once they are brought to the surface, right, once they see the light of day, then it's much more difficult to continue that behavior or to feel like we can, you know, continue doing this without addressing what's going on. And so being able to talk about, you know, why I have this or why it's important to me, or do you want to have this and do you care? What I feel is underneath a lot of this is this sense of wanting to be loved, you know, to love and to be loved and to feel nurtured and witnessed and if you feel secure in those experiences, then we don't need to leave any heavy mark behind, because the fact that we created those relationships, as I said before, we integrate our memories. So I don't necessarily have to have the physical memories because I've incorporated them. I feel like I spun around that answer a little bit, but conversations with the people that you care deeply about, that you let into your life, like that's a great way of opening that door to secrets that we're keeping from ourselves and from others. And speaking of the secrets, you know, one of the challenges with dealing with hoarders is that hoarders are completely convinced that the difficulty they have discarding items and the excessive acquisition of the items is not problematic, despite any evidence to the contrary. So that's a challenge in all mental health care, is that when people can't recognize that their behavior is a problem, then they're not going to seek help or treatment. And so as, you know, loved ones, we can be as concerned as we want, but if our person doesn't recognize that it's an issue, that can't be addressed. Our number is 805-781-3875. I think we have another shy person. Thank you, shy people, for at least calling in.
We appreciate everybody taking the dive and talking to us here today.
Yeah.
This caller says he says that he likes bargains. He can't pass one up, and he says that he buys things that he doesn't need if it's a good deal. Mm. I feel pretty good that I was able to pass on a good deal myself, but he's worried that he might just be a hoarder rather than somebody who just can't pass up a bargain.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for calling in. Because I had written something down about that there is a rush. People who are hoarders talk about the rush that they get when they find a good deal to be able to score that, even if it's not something they need at all. And that also serves a part of our psyche, right? That thrill seeker. For someone who has struggles with depression, that little dopamine hit of finding a good deal and getting that bargain can soothe that, kind of boost our serotonin a little bit, make us feel better, make us feel excited. The challenge, though, is that then that feeling, that rush of getting the good deal kind of wanes, goes away, and then we need that hit again, finding that great deal. And so it is a kind of a challenging cycle to get into, that I love finding the deal. And if I find the deal and I give it to someone else, then I really feel like, you know, that was an extra good score. But the hoarder aspect is, I have a good deal. I get this great deal. I feel so excited about it. And I'm not going to let anyone know. And I'm not going to share it. And I'm going to keep it even though I have no need for it. Like, there becomes that fine line between, is this disordered behavior or is this just kind of the rush of going to a garage sale, which I have been to many in my lifetime, you know, to try to find that great deal. And I also, my sister and I, over the years, we get so excited about our Christmas and birthday presents because we really like to get a bargain and leave the price tag on when we give the gift, because it makes it an even better gift if we can show how much money we saved. So again, that's different than hoarding, because maybe it's not and I don't know it. It's different than hoarding because in the hoarding world, there's a lot of secretiveness behind that. We don't want people to know what we're saving or what we're holding. And if something is taken away, like thrown away without our permission, it causes great distress to the point that people will split up relationships over the tossing of, a bunch of shirts or a bunch of magazines, that people are so psychically connected to the items that if those possessions are tossed away, even if they would be considered garbage in another realm, it causes such despair that it can irreparably harm relationships. Our number is 805-781-3875. And Lisa, thanks for taking the time to call. And thanks for coming on the air with me.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, Elizabeth. Thanks for the conversation. I just wanted to interject that I come from dust bowlers that came from Arkansas in the early 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. And I have this distinction where I've done a lot of cleaning for hoarder cleanup, for property management and real estate agents. And it's been my experience in the last 30 years that the people, I have a past, so to speak. Mm-hmm. If you were a depression baby or a depression baby's baby. Mm-hmm. I understand why you hoard, because mm-hmm. that's your survival. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what you're going to need or who in your family and your extended community is going to need something, and you could be that person
yes.
who has it in their garage
yes.
that could change someone's life. And then I also feel that our capitalism has created consumers mm-hmm. who hoard. And I love that you just said, maybe you don't think there's, maybe you don't realize there's not a distinction. And I'm like, it's true. I think we consume. I personally don't. I'm not a materialist. I kind of try to be a Buddhist about it. Mm-hmm. I don't need those things. And I keep precious things that have memories for me. But I think we've kind of created both of these conditions, age-wise, societally, is my comment.
I agree, Lisa. And thank you, because it was part of what I wanted to say today, and I didn't get there, and you brought it up, that there is the situational part. If you lived through the Depression where there was nothing, or World War II where you were keeping tin foil, right, the pieces of tin and yep. aluminum, that became part of the narrative of your family. Okay. And yes, it does get passed on to the next generation, that whole mindset of saving and being thrifty.
And you could be the hero.
Yes.
And you could have a distributor cap that could make some grandma's car drive. I mean,
yes.
it's, you never know. But
yeah,
I appreciate the conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you for taking the time to call. I appreciate you. And yes, that is such an – have a great day. That is such an important part, is to also understand the situational things that lead us. And we said traumatic event. Well, it is true that the Great Depression was a traumatic event. World War II was a traumatic event that would trigger this life than a lifetime of keeping things. You know, I remember standing in front of my grandmother's linen closet with my mom, and there were so many sets of white sheets. And I don't even know if there were sets. There were just so many. And I said, Mom, you got to clean out this closet. Like, we don't need any of it. I can use any of it. And my mom, without blinking, said, well, what if someone wants to be a ghost for Halloween? And I said, Mom, we don't even live back here in the fall. It's grandma's house. And she laughed. We both laughed. She goes, it's funny how you can get into mindset. Because my mom would be of the post, you know, World War II generation of everything could be repurposed. And I remember reading about the person who saved every toilet paper roll, the cardboard roll, hundreds of thousands, and was desperately hoping to find an art studio or someone who would take these, you know, these toilet paper rolls. And because they were willing to give them away, didn't really feel like they were hoarders, because they felt they were searching for homes for these things. But this woman talked a lot about the guilt she felt on this deep, deep level, because from the time she was young, she was told, don't throw anything away. We might be able to use that. And so, again, inadvertently, as Lisa was saying, we can create the hoarding disorder by kind of along the same lines of parents telling their children, clean your plate, because there might be a starving child who would eat that food. That also, that idea that we need to keep everything. And then also, I love that Lisa brought up the whole materialistic, socialist, capitalistic culture that we live in. I Freudianed a little bit there, didn't I?
You sure did.
The capitalistic culture, and yes, the materialism and the high that people get when they buy things, and the things that we buy really have such short shelf lives. Look at fashion. Fast fashion, just by the name, is not meant to last very long. And so we do have this mindset of, you know, collect to collect. And again, I can find myself at Costco now and then, but it is the home of horror. Hoarding, because, you know, every time there's a crisis, people start having to hoard goods and items. And one more thought about that as well, because it's a little off the hoarding topic. But when I see people, you know, this behavior of I need to take all of this because we might run out, there is a bit of ego in that, a bit of narcissism in that behavior, that I'm so special that I deserve to have all these things. And even though my neighbor may not have a roll of toilet paper, even though someone down the street might not, but I am so entitled that I deserve to have it because I have the money to purchase it. And that kind of mentality really harms us in the long run, and kind of a side note. But if you're someone who hoards things, even though other people could benefit from having them, you might want to be looking at cleaning up your relationships, because generally people who hold things for themselves and hold back from others getting them have that same behavior in their relationships, where they expect that all the love is going to come to them as an entitled way, and they tend to hold their love back as kind of I'll gift you with some love every now and then. But that's a whole nother show. So my spring cleanup tips. One, take a look at what you have. And if the idea of parting with something makes you feel like part of you will die, that's a warning sign that you may be utilizing your material items as some sort of emotional salve, you know, trying to calm yourself. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're a high end of the spectrum hoarder, but even those mild hoarder tendencies can be a good indicator, right? A good reminder is like, huh, why am I hanging on to these things? What are these things representing that I'm not getting filled in other areas of my life? If I were to let this go, what will I replace it with that will give me a sense of wellness? You know, and I don't know what that is for all people, but it could be going out and having a conversation over a cup of coffee with a friend. You know, generally we fill this area of our psyche that wants to be connected and intimate with others quite often with things. That's why shopping therapy or, you know, capitalistic purchasing is so big, because people confuse the rush that they feel from buying something and owning it. They confuse that with what it feels like to be in a relationship with someone they feel closely connected to. So I think that's it. That's your homework. A little spring cleanup. We'll check back in and see how you did in the next couple of weeks. But this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Always happy to hear from you. Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can also check out my website. Contact me there, thereluctanttherapist.com. Find me on Instagram, on Facebook, leave me messages there. I'm easy to find. I'd love to hear from you. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or go to Spotify, Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe, leave a review, share it with friends. We'll build this community. And as always, I thank you for tuning in, listening, and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. How many of your people out there been hurt in some kind of love affair? How many times do you swear that you never love again? How many lonely sleepless nights? How many lies? How many fights? And why would you want to put yourself through all of that again? Love is pain, I hear you say. Love is a cruel and bitter way of paying you back for all the faith you ever had in your brain. Or could it be that what you need the most can leave you feeling just like a ghost? You never want to feel so sad and lost again. One day you could be looking through an old book in rainy weather. You see a picture of her smiling at you when you were still together. You could be walking down the street and who should you chance to meet but that same old smile you've been thinking of all day. As we turn the clock to see you, oh honey, I'll sell the stock, we'll spend all the money, we're starting up a brand new day. Turn the clock on the way back, I wonder if she'll take me back. Started up a brand new day. It could happen to you just like it happened to me. There's simply no immunity, there's no guarantee. I'll say, love is such a